This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:46 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run with Tan Chung Han, Julian Ng, and me, Melissa Idris. And very quickly coming up on The Breakfast Grill, in about 20 minutes or so, Christine Ng, CEO of PeopleLender, which operates the P2P site or the peer-to-peer site called Fundstastic. Han, you're going to be speaking to Christine this morning.
Yeah, so indeed. So real quick, you know, P2P lending essentially is you've got a micro, businesses and micro SMEs who say, you know, perhaps cannot get funding through the conventional means, through the big banks. They then go to sites like these, and investors, you know, even individuals or retail investors, who then say, you know, I would like to invest in these kind of micro SMEs, then can get matched up with these kind of businesses through these sites.
And at the same time, the lenders to those platform will also get much, much higher interest rate than that what they would get from a fixed deposit. But of course, the risk is much higher. You've got to really bear that in mind and don't put all your eggs into one basket.
Mm. Now, I mean, real quick, this is interesting though, because, you know, the Securities Commission announced those six P2P approved platforms back in November. Now, this comes at a time when, if you look at, say, Lending Club, which is the San Fran based, pioneer of sorts, or at least they're one of the bigger names, you know, they have seen some turmoils in terms of some alleged misdeeds by the CEO. You know, so they have got this trust deficit right now. At the same time, you look at China's leading P2P lender, they're actually shifting away from their business models. They're moving away from P2P lending and going towards, hey, we're going to offer you a chance to sign up with mutual funds or all these other investment products and not P2P. So you see these global trends right now, and yet Malaysia is now just starting, you know, now embarking on our P2P journey, so to speak. Keeping in mind, I don't think any of those six that have been approved by the SC are fully operational yet. So we're still very much in the infancy stages. We are ramping up, but when you see, you know, what's happening in China and San Fran, you know, some kind of cautionary tales perhaps for Malaysia.
Yeah, that will be an interesting point to bring up. Mm. So Christine Ng, CEO of PeopleLender, will be on The Breakfast Grill. But coming back to the news, as promised, Alibaba is said to be planning to set up a regional distribution hub in Malaysia to cater to its fast-growing business here in this region. So the hub, apparently, is going to be sited within KLIA Aeropolis. I don't know how to pronounce that.
Aeropolis,
yeah.
That's the first step, right? You got to know how to pronounce it before you can sell
Exactly.
Stuff.
But, yeah, you know, on online, no one's going to be saying the name.
Aeropolis.
I think Malaysia will be Aeropolis.
Aeropolis.
Okay. it's a development led by MHB, or Malaysia Airports Holdings. Now, as you, I think, may have heard, Jack Ma is in town for the Global Transformation Program. He is expected to announce plans at an event here this week. And if he does, it would mark Alibaba's first investment in Malaysia.
Yeah, and also some quick details on the Aeropolis, Aeropolis. So it's expected to generate more than 7 billion ringgit in investments. If you recall, this was first mentioned by their Prime Minister, Dato' Sri Najib Tun Razak, during Budget 2016. So that was, a couple years ago. And the idea is to, again, like you mentioned, it is one of the key pillars for Malaysia Airport's expansion. But ultimately, it's the idea is to make it a hub where you can fulfill e-commerce. E-commerce fulfillment, for example, and various other services. You know, so now the according to this news article, Jack Ma may be in town and he might be making the announcement this week.
Sorry, I think I misspoke. It was GTF, so Global Transformation Forum. I said program, so let me just correct myself there. But if this does come to fruition, this is a huge get for Malaysia. I mean, this is huge investment. You've got a name like Alibaba wanting to set up shop here.
Yeah. No, so again, going through some of these numbers here. So this one project alone, the Aeropolis, they expected to attract GDP contribution of some 30 billion ringgit over a 15-year period and create 56,000 jobs. Now, also keeping in mind, at least according to this news report, it doesn't appear that Alibaba will be going about this alone. There'll be many Malaysian-linked companies that may jump on board. If you recall, post-Malaysia, in October last year. They actually went over to China, had discussions with Alibaba, you know, perhaps being, again, that fulfillment arm for Alibaba's e-commerce operations, right, especially in this part of the world. So you've got that kind of potential for synergy, for growth, you know, so all around, you know, that should spell good news for Malaysians.
Didn't we just, weren't we just speaking about this story last week about how Post Malaysia wants to focus more on B2B as opposed to B2C?
Correct.
Right?
Yeah, the e-commerce is contributing quite substantially to their earnings. But, you know, it's really ironic because you guys know what Alibaba means in Malaysia, right? That Alibaba arrangement in Malaysia means that a Bumiputra company gets a contract and then subcontracts it to a Chinese company. And now Alibaba, Jack Ma, doesn't need to go under that arrangement because he's Alibaba himself. And Jack Ma has to decide whether Alibaba would subcontract this to Malaysian companies like Post Malaysia. There you go, full circle.
Man, connotations aside, you know, again, just, you know, going back to, say, Alibaba and what they're trying to do. I mean, you know, ASEAN is very much in their sights here. You keep in mind, last year, Alibaba spent about $1 billion to control Lazada, right? That's the e-commerce space. I think many Malaysians and many of our listeners will be familiar with them. I mean, they are, after all, Southeast Asia's largest online shopping platform. So if you've got that, you know, at the same time, they've also increased their stake in a Thai e-payment service. So you got Singapore covered, Thailand, and perhaps now Malaysia as well with this Aeropolis.
I don't know. Aeropolis. Maybe
let's go with Aeropolis.
Aeropolis.
Let's keep it Malaysia.
Localized. Yeah, Aeropolis.
I like that. Well, since we're talking about e-commerce and shopping, let's take a look at Malaysians' appetite for retail. Apparently, according to the retail group Malaysia, Malaysian consumers continue to tighten their belts as reflected by the marginal 0.4% increase, a year-on-year increase of growth in retail sales for the fourth quarter of 2016. So quarterly growth for retail sales decelerated for the third quarter after it hit a high of 7.5% in the second quarter of 2016.
And it's interesting because, you know, with the fourth quarter of 2016, usually it's synonymous with, you know, massive
shopping,
year-end sales.
It's festival time, right?
School holidays, you know, you take your trips and, you know, Christmas and whatnot, you know, but yet 0.3%, you know, on year growth in retail sales. So you've got retailers obviously, you know, pointing the finger at, you know, say the weaker consumer sentiments, lack of confidence, and also perhaps the weaker ringgit.
Should we create a day for Malaysia, like a shopping day along the lines of Black Friday and Singles Day? Maybe we should create some kind of day here.
Actually, there is. You know,
in Malaysia?
So there is a Malaysia e-commerce day. I'm just going to pull this.
Okay, that we don't know about this and that you don't know. We're struggling to find out what day this is. It's not working.
Well, I know that we don't really have a term for it, but I do know that we have a specific day specifically for e-commerce sales. It's kind of emulating, you know, Alibaba's Black...
Let's call it Aeropolis Day.
Singles Day.
Is it Singles Day here?
No. That's in China. But why not? Why can't we do it like Japan does? So Japan's trying to stimulate its private consumption,
right?
So the employers are giving employees time off from work to go shopping to spur the economy. I would love if that happened in Malaysia. Take the afternoon off. Go shopping, even if it's online.
Yeah, but also I think, Han, you mentioned earlier on that... there is this survey that's going around where analysts expect a 4% inflation rate for Malaysia.
Yeah, you know, so given...
That's scary.
Yeah, you know, and that kind of newsprint, and I'll go into that in a bit more detail in just a bit, but, you know, those kind of expectations, you know, then in turn weigh on consumer sentiment when they see, oh, raw 95 prices are going up, oh, you know, prices of my everyday goods are going up, my groceries, etc. You know, that does not really bode well if we are expecting a rebound in retail sales. So real quick on... this Friday, March 24th, we'll have February inflation data. According to the Bloomberg survey, the median estimate is a 4% on-year increase. Keeping, you know, last year, the average was about 2.5%. You know, percent. Yeah. January's print was about 3.2%, which is massive.
And we started last year with 1 point something.
That is insane. For me, it's about not just the uptrend, but also the quantum of the leap, right?
Correct.
We're talking about from 1 to 2 to 3 in a space of perhaps a year, and we might even see 4.
So is this due to the ringgit?
Well, Possibly, but you know, I think the main driver, at least according to market estimates here, is mainly because of RON 95. RON 95 accounts for about 13-14% of the overall consumer price index. That's basically inflation. So it measures the prices for a basket of goods. Transport and RON 95 accounts for about 13-14% of that basket. You know, if you recall, February's RON 95 prices came up to about 2.30 ringgit per liter, which is a big jump from where it was a year ago. So hence, that is feeding that headline figure of 4%. And again, an expected 4% on your growth for CPI. We'll find out the actual data on Friday.
Okay, so if we're worried about the expected 4% inflation, what about Venezuela, where inflation is 500%?
Yeah, so I guess it's all about context, isn't it? No, here we are freaking about 4%.
Hey, 4% is a lot.
Yeah, no, Venezuelans will kill for 4% inflation right now. So, you know, and just goes to show again, Venezuela, you know, you got to keep in mind, these guys have the world's largest proven oil reserves, and they were hit hard by the unexpected downturn in oil prices that we've seen since 2014. And government policies were not able to keep up. You know, again, as unpopular as this sounds, you know, GST in Malaysia came at a good time because it was able to then fill in that void where oil-related revenue, there were shortcomings, right, now in oil-related revenue. So GST came in and kind of saved the day, at least in terms of fiscal spending, although granted, you know, going back to inflation, that didn't really do us any favors on that front, like, as consumers. But when you look at Venezuelans, they're getting to the point now where, according to this CNBC article, even brownies and pastries are deemed illegal. Why? Because they've got a policy by the government under President Nicolas Maduro, who then says you got to stick to literally just bread, like plain
basics,
bread.
Right, yeah.
That's an illegal brownie of a different kind, right? I know of some other illegal brownies, but I suppose this is due to, you know, years and years of the Chavismo policy by Hugo Chavez, the ex-leader, just his legacy, I suppose.
You know, when Nicolas Maduro is issuing some, you know, really stern words, they're saying they are going to pay. I swear, he's talking about those irresponsible bakers. You know, because essentially he's saying, no, you got to stick to the basic needs of the people. You know, in keeping with his socialist government, when you offer these added value products like brownies and pastries, you know, people don't have the means to pay for it anyways, although they want to, you know. So again, it's going against what the government mandates. I mean, it just goes to show, you know, again, it's all about perspective, right? Do we whine about the 4% inflation when you consider how another oil-based economy like Venezuela and the travails that they're experiencing right now, you know, perhaps
but
we
that's
should...
But
Venezuela
other
is
end,
an exception.
Yeah,
right?
Other end of the spectrum.
I mean, you're talking about certain countries in the world having a 0% inflation and you're trying to, like, put a jump start on that. So it's all about perspective. I think it is worrying. 4% inflation is very worrying.
Yeah, but that's for February, though. But say March, where there was not... where RON 95 prices held steady at 2.30 ringgit, you know, there wasn't a month-on-month increase there. Now, perhaps that could see some reprieve in the headline figures. Although, granted, this Friday we'll only know about February's data. Next month we'll look at March data and then we'll go from there.
Okay, we've got the 8 o'clock news bulletin after this and the Breakfast Grill with Christine Ng, CEO of People Lender, coming up after that. So stay tuned to The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.